Hey there, it's Frank Buckley. I've interviewed thousands of people in my career, and today I'm interviewing someone who has interviewed tens of thousands of people. And at the age of 86, he's still doing it. My guest is Larry King. We did this interview on the set of his show, Larry King Now, and Larry obviously knows how to conduct a great interview, but I found out during this conversation that he is also a great guest, because he revealed some things during our conversation that I don't think he's ever talked about publicly. We knew he'd had a health scare a few months ago, but during this conversation, we learned just how bad it was. It was a stroke, and we learned how Larry almost considered ending his life because of it. Larry King is back, though, and the mic is hot once again. Here's my conversation with Larry King.
Larry, it is great to have you on the program. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Great to be with you, Frank. We worked together at CNN for a spite of time, and good to work with you again.
Thank you, sir. It is great to have you back and healthy again as well. You know, we all heard that you had had a health scare of some sort last spring.
Oh, some sorts wasn't a word. It was in March, and I had just received a diagnosis of leukemia. However, it was chronic and not acute, and there's a difference between those two. Acute, you're not going to live long. Chronic, you could have as long as life. And they had just put me on a pill, and I was driving for a checkup, and the last thing I remember. And I woke up, and it was 2 weeks later, and they told me I had had a small stroke, and I had everything go. They put a new stent in my heart. They had to put that, you know, the thing where they put on your chest.
Yeah.
I had no memory. No memory of it at all.
Your heart stopped.
Yeah. But I had no memory of it. So that was kind of lucky. So all I've seen, they showed me pictures of me in intensive. You don't want to go to intensive care.
Mm.
There are better places to be.
Yeah.
So I'm on the mend, you know, and for someone 86 to gone through all the things I've gone through, I can't believe I'm around.
Well, and not just around, but still working.
Well, once I was able to get back to work, I fled. I'm going to work. Work is part of me. I'm 86, and I don't remember a time when I didn't work. I've been in this business 62 years. Holy. I mean, think about it.
62. Yeah. And isn't it something like 30,000 interviews?
Oh, more. They think 50,000.
50,000.
Maybe more. Because remember, when I did the all-night radio, which you're familiar with, I did the all-night show on Mutual. A lot of guests there. And on CNN, 26 years. A lot of guests there. And before CNN, a lot of guests in local television.
Yeah.
Where I worked in Washington.
And Miami too, right?
In Miami, yeah. So I started it. It all started in Miami.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that. You grow up in Brooklyn.
Yep.
How do you end up in Miami doing radio?
I tell you, all my life, Frank, I wanted to be on the radio. I thought about television, but briefly, about the radio. I used to imitate, when I was five or six years old, I would imitate what I heard on the radio. I'd go into another room and go, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men, the shadow knows, or a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense, lights out, on. And I love the theater of the mind. But I was knocking around some odd jobs, graduated high school, didn't go to college, worked for United Parcel Service for a while, helper on a truck. And a friend of mine introduced me in New York on the street to James Sermons, who was chief of staff announcers at CBS. And I said, what would you do if you were me? I want to get into radio, doing these odd jobs. He said, you ought to go down to Miami. There's no union, and there's a lot of stations. So there's guys on the way out and on the way in. Be a chance to get in. So I went down to Miami, auditioned, got hired at a small radio station, WAHR. I'll never forget this long as I live. It was Friday, the last day of April, and the general manager called me in and said, you start Monday. you're a disc jockey, you'll play music from 9 to 12, and then in the afternoon you'll do sports and news. That's what you did, $50 a week. Well, I was so thrilled. I went home, programmed all my music. Now it's May 1st, 1957. My thrill is about to occur.
Right.
I put on Les Elgart swinging down the lane. Da-da-da-da-dum. I lower it, nothing comes out. I bring it up again, nothing comes out. 10 minutes before, they had just given me the name Larry King. I was Larry Zaga. And I was scared. And I did something that day that I would do today. And I learned a lesson that day, which is just tell the audience what's going on. So I shut down the thing. I said, good morning. My name is Larry King. I just got that name. I've been wanting to be on radio all my life, and this is my first day, and I'm scared. Please bear with me. Now, I told this later to other people. What I discovered naturally that day, not by genius, if you tell the audience exactly what the situation is, any goof I made that day, it's his first day.
Right.
In fact, a guy once asked me, supposing you were walking down the hall at NBC, a guy grabbed you and said, Tom Brokaw's sick, you're doing the news, and handed you. I would say, I was walking down the hall, someone just grabbed me, and I'm doing the news. So, and then I got into television right away. A year later, I had my own, because the radio show really took off, and I had my own television interview show at Sunday nights, and Jackie Gleason was on that show a lot. And the career spiraled.
Mm. You were at CNN from when to when?
I joined CNN on their fifth anniversary, June 1st, 1985.
Right.
They started June 1st, 1980. Ted Turner called me, and he said, Sandy Freeman was doing the show at 9 o'clock. And he said, her husband is her agent, and he's driving me nuts. Would you like to do the show? Would you like to take over 9 o'clock on CNN? But I'll tell you something that's funny about that show. The first night on Governor Cuomo of New York, I knew that show was going to make it. I don't know why. We were in small studios in Georgetown. But there was something about the whole CNN.
You had this remarkable ability to go into an interview. I got some papers right here. Cool. And I sketch down a few questions. It seemed to me that you would sort of go in with an encyclopedia in your head.
I never wrote out a question. I had blue cards with facts, which I still have. And you need facts. You know, how long has this guy been in the Senate? Did he vote on something recently?
Right.
And then take those little facts and just go with them, man. You know, I'll tell you a thing, Frank, and I should break this to the camera. It ain't brain science. What we're doing here is not brain surgery.
To my bosses, that's not true.
But I saw
this is brain surgery.
I saw a funny cartoon in the New Yorker of brain surgeons, and they're all standing around the table, and the brain surgeon's about to start, and the guy next to him says, "It ain't television."
Let me take you to one particular interview where. I think it illustrates your point of listening and also continuing to probe. This is Ross Perot. Before he announced, you ask him over and over, essentially three times. And finally the third time around.
I'll tell you what happened.
Yeah.
I asked him the first time, we were about 10 minutes in. Now I got no interest. So at 10 minutes after, he said he wasn't interested. At the bottom of the hour, 30 minutes after, he said, no. Now, 5 minutes to go, and I come up with this. Are there any circumstances, any, in which you run for president? And he thought for a minute. He said, well, if I get on the ballot in all 50 states, I'd do it. But I'd have to get on the ballot. When we finished, I was walking out the door with him, and he said to me, how do you think this is going to go? I said, I got no idea. And he called me the next day. And the bellman in his hotel left him an envelope with a $10 donation. And that spurred him on. And there was nothing like the Ross Perot extravaganza.
Other people who you've interviewed, who you've liked, who you connected with through this process?
A lot. I like most people to begin with. Most people are interesting. People are more interesting than you think. But I would say I certainly like Frank Sinatra. And I like Bill Cosby. And I did a show with Bill Cosby from the house he grew up in.
You like Bill Cosby when you hear about sad. The conviction and
I get sad, you know. Yeah. I mean, obviously it was true. They nailed him to the wall. But the Bill Cosby I knew, and by the way, don't think that because I interview you and I like you, you're a great person.
Right.
Because you could be a cad, and Bill Cosby was a cad, but I didn't know it.
Right.
He was a great interview.
Yeah.
He answered the questions. He was he knew what the interviewer wanted. He was funny. So what am I going to do? Abandon ship?
Right.
I liked him.
Yeah. Who else? Who were some of the ones who you... Because I'm not going to ask you who are your favorite interviews, because it's
impossible.
You know, with 50,000 interviews under your belt, how do you choose? But the ones who you, when you think, oh, man, that was a really good one, or I really enjoyed meeting that person.
All the comics.
The comics.
Seinfeld, Mel Brooks. Mel Rickles. Come on. Rickles used to put me away. Mel Brooks was is still the funniest man I have ever known. I love comics. I did comedy. I did a tour. I did stand-up. When I speak at conventions or things, I always tell funny stories.
This health situation that you've overcome, did it ever make you think for a second, maybe I should call it a day? 50,000 interviews. I've achieved every height.
In fact, I want a truth. The day I woke up in intensive care, and I knew I was in bad shape just by the people around me, the darkened shades. Cedars a good hospital.
Yeah.
And my son Chance was just turning 20. And I thought, I swear to God, in those 5 minutes talking to him, I thought I was just going to bite the bullet. I didn't want to live this way. I didn't want to live dependent on others. I've had a full career. There's nothing I could add to it except just to do more. And I thought I don't know how to commit suicide. How do you commit suicide? I don't know how. Is there a pill you could take? There might be a pill.
I don't know.
I was ready to bite the bullet. And I said to him, Chance, and he started to cry. I hadn't seen him cry since he was 3 years old. Mm. And he said, you can't leave us. You can't leave us. And I changed that minute. I was losing thing, and then I wanted to get better.
Mm.
I wanted to get better, not to be on the air, but for the kids.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing beats children. Nothing. The best thing I ever did in my life was be a father.
Yeah.
Anything else is secondary to being a father.
Yeah.
And when your children, I got 5 children, 3 grown, all are well, all done well. The gratification you get from that, boy, you gotta appreciate it, being a father.
Absolutely. But you never, so at that moment, you thought about it for a second, it sounds like quitting your life,
thought
not just your career.
Well, I was just being told, what kind of life am I gonna have?
Hmm.
Not gonna be able to walk. I'm very close, I'm not out of the woods yet. I've just had a new stent put in, I've got all these illnesses. I'm going to be a patient for a long period of time. And I looked at myself, I was 85. Why do I need this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to be afraid of death. And now I'm not afraid of death. I don't know what changed. But I was ready to, as they say, bite the bullet. I was ready to kiss it off.
You say you're not afraid of death, and you were famously afraid of death.
Oh.
You used to read, I don't know if you still do, but the obits every morning.
I still read the obits, and I also looked into the idea of being frozen. Because then I'd wake up in 100 years, and they cured whatever I died of, and I'm alive again.
Yeah.
And someone said to me, but you won't know anybody. Hmm. And I said, I'll make new friends. But no, I'm not afraid of it now, because it's the one thing all of us are going to face. And facing it is like, and when you face all these illnesses and you can come through and buy some time. I'm 86. Now let's look at it. What's the average age of the American male? 76, 77. I beat it by 10 years. My father died of a heart attack when he was 46.
When you were 9.
So I was 9. I beat him by 40 years. Something had to go right with me. Or is that Paul Newman movie, somebody up there likes me. I do not believe in anyone up there. I know I'm not religious at all. That I lost a long time ago. Mm. And I lost that through interviews. Interviewing priests, and I was a good friend of Billy Graham.
Yeah.
Him I got along with. But they never had answers that I sought. Mm. I just couldn't buy it when they wouldn't get explain the Holocaust.
How can you explain?
We do not question the ways of the Lord. Now, wait a minute. You're a spokesman of the Lord. You don't question his ways. Hmm. You don't speak up to him. You don't get angry. I don't believe in the Lord.
I don't want to be all morbid, but at this point in your career and life, do you start thinking about things like legacy and what I'm leaving behind and that sort of thing?
When I'm asked about it, yeah, I don't go around thinking about it. But my legacy would be he informed and entertained. I was always aware that I was informing people, but doing it in an entertaining manner. You know, you could read from the encyclopedia and inform people. I always knew that what I did, I loved. And I brought, hopefully, brought an appreciation of that love to the radio audience or the television audience or the newspaper reader, or I've written 16 books or people who buy books. I'm a communicator. I loved communicating. So if there were a legacy, it would be he communicated. He knew how to take guests or whatever it was, or the column in the paper, and deliver something that people would find interesting, funny, enlightening. Add to the lives of people who are your customers. That's what they are.
I think you have done that, and you're still doing it. And so I would ask you, as you continue to do this, who are you looking forward to interviewing next? Who are the big gets that you have your eyes on?
Well, two of the gets I know very well, and that's Trump and Biden. So the president and the guy running against the president are always big gets. I guess I've had all these people at one time or another who are running for office on my show.
Of those Democratic candidates, anyone else that you want here?
All of them.
All of them.
Oh, yeah. You know, something I've learned. When you put yourself up for office, I admire you. I may disagree with you, because you're going to face someday something I don't face and you don't face. You're going to face a Tuesday in November, and you're going to face rejection or accept. We have ratings, but they go up and down.
Yeah.
But if you run for office, there will be a Tuesday in November where someone will say goodbye. We don't get goodbyes.
Right.
Politicians get that. So I admire them all for standing. And I could disagree with them, of course. But for standing up for whatever they believe in. And who, you know, I always wanted to interview Castro. Hmm. I went down to Havana. We came close, but we didn't get him. Ted Turner tried to get him, folks. I was a friend of his. Because Castro amazed me. He led his country for more years than any leader in the history of the world. 60 years.
Yeah.
He led that country. Somebody had to like him.
Yeah. It's about the same number you've been doing this business, and I'll tell you, it has always been a goal of mine to sit down with you across the table, and what a pleasure this has been.
I love working with you, Frank.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to see my conversation with Larry King, check out Frank Buckley Interviews this weekend on KTLA 5. We're on Saturday night at 8:30 and Sunday at midnight, and we'll post the show to YouTube after it airs on TV. Do you want to check out Larry King now or his political show? Go to my podcast page at ktla.com/Frank Buckley Interviews, and we'll have all the details, including a link to his shows on aura.tv. As always, I appreciate the feedback. I'm Frank Buckley TV on Twitter and on Instagram, and I read your comments on the Frank Buckley Facebook page as well. Thanks for joining us this week, and until next time, I'll see you on TV.